Benicia, California, is a waterside community in Solano County, located in the North Bay region of the San Francisco Bay Area, northeast of the city. It's a picturesque community steeped in history. It served as the state capital for nearly 13 months, from 1853 to 1854. In December 1968, Benicia and neighboring Vallejo was home to mostly middle-class families whose fathers and husbands commuted into the city while the moms stayed home with the kids. It was not the kind of place where residents were fearful or mistrustful of their neighbors. But that was about to change. On the evening of December 20th, 17-year-old David Faraday had worked up the courage to ask Betty Lou Jensen on a date. It was not only the couple's first date, it was the first time Betty Lou's parents had allowed her to go out with a boy. Both teenagers were excited. They told their parents they were going to a Christmas concert at Hogan High School in Vallejo, located easy walking distance from Betty Lou's home. Afterward, the couple dropped in to visit a friend, then stopped at a restaurant for a bite to eat. Shortly after 10 p.m., David drove out Lake Herman Road and parked at a water pumping station near the town of Vallejo in a secluded spot that was known to be a lover's lane. That was the last time David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen were known to be alive. At around 11 p.m., Stella Borges, who lived nearby, saw a parked car with its door open, illuminated by the interior dome light. Walking toward the vehicle in the darkness, with only a flashlight, she came upon a grisly scene. David Faraday, his head and face soaked with blood, lay on the ground near the driver's side door. About 15 feet away, Betty Lou Jensen lay face down. Both were dead. The police were called to the scene, but had few clues to go on and no witnesses. They speculated that while the couple was occupied, another car drove into the gravel parking area, and its driver got out of the vehicle and ordered David and Betty Lou to exit their car. Forensics suggested that David was shot once in the head as he was in the process of getting out of the car and fell beside it. It appeared Betty Lou exited the other side and began running for her life. The attacker ran after her and shot her 5 times in the back, killing her instantly. The weapon was a .22 caliber semi-automatic pistol firing Winchester Western Super X copper-coated long rifle cartridges. There was no indication of robbery or sexual molestation. There appeared to be no motive. There were rumors that David knew details of a local drug operation and had talked about it, but they were mostly rumors. The community was stunned, but believed the two young people had been victims of some senseless and random act of violence. No one knew it was the start of something twisted and evil that would traumatize the Bay Area for years to come. Almost 7 months later, 19-year-old Michael Magoe and 22-year-old Darlene Farron were out for an enjoyable evening attending various July 4th festivities in and around Vallejo. They ended the evening by driving into the Blue Rock Springs Park in Vallejo, just 4 miles from the Lake Herman Road murder site. They parked, turned off the lights, and did what young people do. The murders of David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen the previous December had done little to dampen romance among area young people. It wasn't like they were alone in the park. Several teenagers were nearby, setting off firecrackers and bottle rockets. But suddenly the kids left, and Magoe and Farron were alone, but not for long. Minutes later, a car drove alongside the couple's vehicle, stopped, and immediately drove away. It was a bit odd, but Magoe and Farron were not alarmed. 10 minutes later, the car returned and parked behind the couple's car. The driver got out of the vehicle quickly walked to the passenger door where Farron was seated and shined a flashlight into the occupant's eyes. He began firing from a 9mm Luger, getting off 5 shots. When he was about to leave, he heard a shout from Michael and returned and shot each person 2 more. This time, it wasn't a neighbor who reported a crime, but the killer himself. Shortly after midnight, the Vallejo Police Department received a call from a man who said he had just shot 2 young people in Blue Rock Springs Park. He told police where they could find the victims. He also reported that he had shot and killed David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen 7 months earlier. Police were able to trace the call and found it had been made from a phone booth at a gas station only a few blocks from the Vallejo Police Department. The conversation was brief. Police dispatcher Nancy Slover's notes reconstructed the message this way.
I want to report a double murder. If you will go 1 mile east on Columbus Parkway to the public park, you will find the kids in a brown car. They were shot with a 9mm Luger. I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye.
When police arrived at the scene, Magot was lying on the ground on the left side of the vehicle. When the attack began, he leaped into the back seat in an effort to avoid the hail of bullets. The killer would later say that Magot's thrashing around in the back seat made it hard to hit him. Officers found Farron to be semi-conscious but unable to speak. Farron was dead on arrival at the hospital, but miraculously, Magot survived the attack, even though he had been shot in the face, neck, and chest. As he recovered, Michael gave police a description of the killer. He was 26 to 30 years old, 195 to 200 pounds, a heavyset guy, 5'8", white male, short, light brown, curly hair. A police artist produced a sketch, and it was widely distributed to the surrounding area. But police weren't sure it was the same killer who attacked Faraday and Jensen, or simply a copycat. But the possibility that there was a serial killer in the neighborhood put everyone on edge. What happened next caused near hysteria. On August 1st, less than a month after the attack in Blue Rock Springs Park, 3 letters claiming to be from the killer were received at the Vallejo Times-Herald, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the San Francisco Examiner. The letters were nearly identical and riddled with misspellings. A psychiatrist later analyzed the messages and suggested they were written by someone brooding and isolated. The letters also included 1/3 of a 408-symbol cryptogram, which the killer claimed would reveal his identity if someone could solve it. He demanded that his letter and the cryptogram be printed on the front page of each paper. If they were not, he warned, he would kill up to 12 people over the next weekend.
This is the Zodiac speaking. In answer to your asking for more details about the good times I have had in Vallejo, I shall be happy to supply even more material. By the way, are the police having a good time with the code? If not, tell them to cheer up. When they do crack it, they will have me. On the 4th of July, I did not open the car door. The window was rolled down already. The boy was originally sitting in the front seat when I began firing. When I fired the first shot at his head, he leaped backwards at the same time, thus spoiling my aim. He ended up on the back seat, then the floor in back, thrashing out very violently with his legs. That's how I shot him in the knee. I did not leave the scene of the killing with squealing tires and racing engine as described in the Vallejo paper. I drove away quite slowly, so as not to draw attention to my car. The man who told police that my car was brown was a Negro, about 40 to 45, rather shabbily dressed. I was in this phone booth having some fun with the Vallejo cop when he was walking by. When I hung up the phone, the damn thing began to ring, and that drew his attention to me and my car. Last Christmas, in that episode, the police were wondering how I could shoot and hit my victims in the dark. They did not openly state this, but implied this by saying it was a well-lit night, and I could see silhouettes on the horizon. Bullshit. That area is surrounded by high hills and trees. What I did was tape a small pencil flashlight to the barrel of my gun. If you notice, in the center of the beam of light, if you aim it at a wall or ceiling, you will see a black or dark spot in the center of the circle of light, about 3 to 6 inches across. When taped to a gun barrel, the bullet will strike in the center of the black dot in the light. All I had to do was spray them as if it was a water hose. There was no need to use gun sights. I was not happy to see that I did not get front page coverage.
It took a full week, but 7 days later, on August 8th, a couple from Salinas, California, Donald and Betty Hayden, announced they had cracked the 408 symbol cryptogram. Like the letters, it too contained numerous misspellings. And like the letters, it was bone-chilling.
I like killing people because it is so much fun. It is more fun than killing wild game in the forest, because man is the most dangerous animal of all. To kill something gives me the most thrilling experience. It is even better than getting your rocks off with a girl. The best part of it is that when I die, I will be reborn in paradise, and the people I have killed will become my slaves. I will not give you my name, because you will try to slow down or stop my collecting of slaves for my afterlife.
The final 20 letters of the cryptogram did not form any words, at least not in any earthly language. By now, the population of the entire Bay Area was on edge. The police were extremely concerned. Though Vallejo appeared to be ground zero for the Zodiac Killer's activities, his inclusion of the two San Francisco newspapers made clear he intended to operate in a wider area. On September 27th, Pacific Union College students Brian Hartnell, age 20, and 22-year-old Cecilia Shepherd were on a picnic at Lake Berryessa in the heart of wine country and nearly 50 miles northeast of Vallejo. At first, they didn't really notice when a man, described as being white, about 5 feet 11 inches tall and around 170 pounds, with combed, greasy brown hair, approached them wearing a black executioner-style hood with clip-on sunglasses. On his chest was a bib-like device with a white 3x3-inch cross circle symbol on it. He approached the couple and pulled a gun, which Hartnell believed to be a .45 caliber pistol. The man said he had just escaped from jail, where he had killed a guard and stolen a car. He then produced pre-cut lengths of plastic clothesline and forced Shepherd to tie up Hartnell before he tied her up. Hartnell said he thought the encounter was a robbery, and it hadn't entered his mind that he and his friend had come face to face with the Zodiac Killer, and that they were in mortal danger. But when both were tied up securely, the man pulled out a long knife and stabbed both people several times. Brian suffered 6 wounds, but Cecilia was stabbed 10 times. Their attacker then walked away, and when he reached Brian's car, withdrew a black felt-tip pin and drew a cross-circle symbol on the car door. Beneath it he wrote,
Vallejo, 12-20-68, 7-4-69, September 27, 69, 6:30, by knife.
Hearing the couple's screams, a man and his son, who were fishing in the lake, found the victims and called park rangers for help. Meanwhile, the Napa County Sheriff's Office had received a call from a man who claimed to be the attacker. The call was traced to a payphone at a car wash only a few blocks from the sheriff's office. The receiver was found dangling off the hook with a still wet, bloody palm print. Napa County Sheriff's deputies Dave Collins and Ray Land were the first officers to arrive at the scene. Cecilia Shepherd was still conscious when Collins arrived and provided him with a detailed description of the attacker. Both Hartnell and Shepherd were taken to the nearest hospital by ambulance. Cecilia fell into a coma during the ride to the hospital and never regained consciousness. She died 2 days later. But Brian lived to tell the harrowing tale. In less than a year, the Zodiac Killer had struck 3 times, killing 4 people. Amazingly, 2 of his victims had survived to provide police detailed descriptions of the man. But from now on, there would be no survivors. And even with the victims' help, the police were no closer to finding the killer. 2 weeks went by, and the Zodiac struck again, this time within the city limits of San Francisco. On October 11th, cab driver Paul Stein stopped to pick up a passenger at Mason and Geary Streets, a block west of Union Square. The man said he wanted to go to a location in Presidio Heights. When the cab came to a stop at its destination, Stein was shot once in the back of the head with a 9mm handgun. The attacker took his victim's wallet and keys, along with a fragment of Stein's blood-soaked shirt. Across the street, 3 teenagers watched in horror. A police officer happened to be 2 blocks away and came running to the crime scene in time to see a white man walking along the sidewalk and stepping onto a stairway leading up to the front yard of one of the homes on the north side of the street. It appeared the police now had the Zodiac Killer in their sights. But when the description of the attacker was broadcast by the San Francisco police dispatcher, the white male had become a black male. So several squad cars likely drove past the killer without recognizing him. But again, more witnesses had now seen the man, and police sketch artists were creating a more refined image of the man who was now terrorizing Northern California. On October 14th, 3 days after Paul Stein's murder, the San Francisco Chronicle received another letter from the Zodiac Killer, along with a piece of Paul Stein's bloody shirt. The bizarre story got even more bizarre. The letter threatened to kill children on a school bus. This could be easily accomplished, Zodiac wrote.
Just shoot out the front tire and then pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out.
The following week, someone claiming to be Zodiac called the Oakland Police Department, demanding that either F. Lee Bailey or Melvin Belli, 2 famous local attorneys, appear on a local television show, AM San Francisco. Belli did appear, and sure enough, a man claiming to be the Zodiac called. During the rambling conversation, he said his name was Sam. Belli urged the caller to meet him at a location in Daly City, but the caller never showed up. The killer continued to toy with the media and the police. In early November, the newspapers received another cryptogram, this one containing 340 symbols. To this day, it has not been cracked. He also mailed a 7-page letter claiming that 2 police officers had actually stopped him and spoken to him for several minutes after he killed the cab driver, but let him go. Then, on December 20th, exactly 1 year after the madness began with the murders of David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen, the Zodiac sent a letter to Melvin Belli that included another piece of Paul Stein's shirt, saying he wanted the attorney to help him.